Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Corey Sassy Knockreiner. You'll learn why I'm sassy soon.
Corey Sassy Knockreiner. On today's episode, as Corey alluded to, we are sitting down with analyst John Grady to cover a few ranges of topics, including sassy, what it is, what it matters to you, and Zero Trust Network Access, or ZTNA. With that, let's just go ahead and sass on in.
Better than dive. Welcome back, everyone. And today's segment is special in that we're interviewing an analyst about some industry terms. So today we're speaking to an analyst, John Grady, who covers network security at the Enterprise Strategy Group, or ESG. John leverages over 15 years of IT vendor and analyst experience to help his clients identify and quantify key market trends to facilitate data-driven business decisions. Prior to ESG, John has a long history at vendors as well. He spent 4 years at Symantec. He was responsible for developing market insights in support of product, go-to-market, and other executive stakeholders. Previous to that, John worked as an analyst covering network, web, and email protection, leading initial research initiatives on then-emerging areas such as advanced threat protection and DDoS attacks. As an analyst, he is focused on infrastructure channels, assessing and advising on the go-to-market strategies of IT vendors, especially from an indirect perspective. He's also written for all kinds of publications, from Dark Reading. He's also been quoted in Network World, CSO, eWeek, and TechTarget, among others. So it really is a pleasure to have you today to talk about some of these technologies, John.
Thanks, Corey. Happy to be here.
Cool. So today, I really want to do a primer on what some new technology and security terms that we see in the analyst community that do involve some new but also some kind of combined older technologies being brought together. Most importantly, these terms kind of encapsulate a change to network and security topologies that have become increasingly important to businesses now that COVID has really accelerated this kind of idea of work from anywhere. So the two terms we want to cover, and really one contains the other, one is Secure Access Service Edge, also known as SASE, its acronym, and another is Zero Trust Network Access, or ZTNA. I suspect many of the listeners out there might have heard one of these terms, or at least intuitively kind of understand the security implications of it, but I suspect less of our listeners might be familiar with SASE. So really, that's what we want to talk to you about today, John. So why don't we start with SASE? At a very high level, what is SASE and what kind of problems or things does it solve for organizations out there?
Sure. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head in that analysts sometimes get out in front of, you know, naming things and trying to come up with clever acronyms. But I do think in this case, it hits on an issue that a lot of organizations are trying to solve for, which is the fact that more and more applications and users are outside the corporate environment, and you need consistent protection for your entire environment, whether that's on-premises or off. So as you said, it stands for Secure Access Services Edge, and it's the idea that the network security stack needs to be replatformed in the cloud and converge a lot of the functionality that we've typically had siloed in different kinds of point tools. So things like firewall, secure web gateway, cloud access security brokers, DLP, there's a whole list of kind of tools and capabilities that are included in this on the security side. And then the other piece of this is that it incorporates networking as well, and specifically SD-WAN. So there's a convergence of security, there's a convergence of security and networking. And again, it really tries to solve for, when this came out, it was pre-pandemic, and it was solving for the distributed environment more from a branch office perspective, hence the SD-WAN piece. Since most organizations are now predominantly working from home, the focus has been on remote users. But in either case, it's, you know, the fact that you don't have these kind of logical choke points on the network anymore, that you need distributed protection, but to facilitate kind of consistency, you need centralized management.
Yeah, and I like the part you said about cloud first. I mean, as you mentioned, things about like a distributed enterprise networking, the fact that a lot of us have branch offices isn't new, but a lot of our networking and security topology was kind of based on a data center or a core headquarters office. And that was all well and good as far as the branch part of it, but there's so much we do in the cloud now, whether it's private, public, or SASE. There's all these work from home remote users, and to kind of pull them into this branch enterprise was different because that data center was the hub. And really one of the core things in SASE is now this cloud gateway becomes the hub. It still pulls in the data center and the branch offices, but pulling that hub of your entire topology to the cloud actually makes it easier, in my opinion, to add security workloads and kind of a single policy to some of the cloud stuff that was missing. So that's great. The other thing about SASE, and I think you kind of alluded to this, is I would say it's an acronym for this paradigm shift in security and topology and networking converging, but it's not necessarily one new technology. Rather, it seems to be a combination of technologies. So can you tell me, and I think you mentioned one, SD-WAN, right away, what are some of the core technologies, security and networking, that you really think are part of this kind of SASE paradigm?
Yeah, there's a number, and I think you hit the nail on the head. This is really a new way for users to consume a lot of capabilities that they've had for a while. So I think you touched in the intro on kind of ZTNA or Zero Trust Network Access. That's probably the best example of something that's kind of net new, and you can do that without SASE. But otherwise, it's a lot of the tools that users have consumed, and in the mid-market specifically, have consumed via unified threat management or next-gen firewall capabilities. I covered that market for a number of years at IDC, and in some ways, this is kind of the next logical evolution of that space, making it more cloud-centric and kind of building out the functionality. But on the networking side, it's primarily SD-WAN and VPN, so, you know, providing the transport and the access. And then on the security side, it's firewall as a service, secure web gateway, cloud access security brokers, DLP, and then some of that's pulled in by the CASB and secure web gateway. Yep. Advanced threat protection and sandboxing, DNA. I mean, the list, when you look at, this is a Gartner term, I think we skipped over that. When you look at the research note that Gartner's put out, it's an overwhelming list of capabilities. And, you know, what I often talk about is this is a big idea that's going to take a number of years to implement. And so from a user perspective, it's just starting to think about, how do I begin my migration to the cloud in terms of security controls? Because you're already doing that from a resource and application perspective, right? And, you know, what's kind of my primary use case? And for a lot of organizations now, it's remote workers. So what kind of technology should I think about converging to support those workers and then move forward? Because if you try to do it all at once and kind of tick off all the capabilities I just walked through, it's going to be an overwhelming experience.
Yeah. And I think you're exactly right that some of these capabilities you definitely have, like even a UTM like WatchGuard has a lot of the secure web gateway, the firewalling and other network security layers, and even to some extent, zero trust networking possibilities when it's tied to authentication. But the as a service part of, say, firewall is important, right? I think the traditional paradigm of delivering that was either an appliance or software. And those will probably still exist, but the firewall as a service also implies that you can just get those UTM services through some cloud gateway too. While we'll talk about this a little later, I don't think appliances will go away, but technologically there's possibility of not necessarily needing the appliance to deliver all those services, which would help a remote user, for example, right? Because maybe the remote user doesn't have an appliance that goes with them, but if they can get a lot of the same security and UTM policies they had with the hardware appliance, it's really win-win. So Love that. For SD-WAN, by the way, I think a lot of our users are familiar with that. A lot of them are kind of distributed enterprises that have been using VPNs and stuff. And they have multi-WAN for sure. So they kind of balance between those WAN connections for the best connection if they want to get rid of MPLS, or even if they have MPLS and they just want the best speed. But can we talk a little bit about SD-WAN features and what's different in a SASE environment? The one thing I'm not sure everyone knows about is like the difference between like a customer configured SD-WAN. If you have a bunch of appliances that support it, you can configure all these policies. And some of the SD-WAN providers out there that are kind of cloud managed SD-WAN providers. So kind of what's the difference in SD-WAN and how does that impact SASE?
So it's early days, and I think there's kind of still a mix of both. But if you look at SASE from, you know, what its ultimate goal is, it definitely leans towards that cloud-managed capability. So you mentioned the benefits. The idea is take better advantage of broadband connections, get away from MPLS, make use of all the connectivity that you have within your environment, prioritize, you know, application traffic and things like that. And so the idea with SASE is to do that with an eye towards security. So I do think that, you know, currently there's a kind of a mix of approaches. There's still a lot of, you know, appliance-centric, you know, SD-WAN capabilities. The SD-WAN providers that are starting to message on SASE are really only providing rudimentary security capabilities. So I think that's important, is that there's a lot of types of vendors talking about this, and you really have to kind of look at exactly what they're doing. I think the security vendors that are offering SD-WAN, especially in the mid-market, they bring the strong security controls. And then in a lot of cases, you know, functionality on the SD-WAN side that's, you know, very usable for that mid-market environment. And so, you know, prioritizing what the goal is really is what's important.
Yeah. And I think one way I would talk about managed SD-WAN is the difference might be the gateway for the whole thing being some cloud gateway rather than your own headquarters or data center. In both cases, the actual SD-WAN technology is probably the same, but by being a cloud gateway, you kind of open it up to remote users. You open it up to, you know, if you've created a topology for your customers, you might have accelerated paths to some of the public clouds and the SaaS applications out there that you actually, you know, a managed SD-WAN vendor can control, whereas a normal customer premise SD-WAN person would just have to use, you know, whatever path the ISP gives them. Cool. So we have mentioned firewall as a service. I by the way, agree with you. You know, I see a lot of, we definitely have SD-WAN capabilities in our UTM or next generation firewall, whatever you prefer to call it. We have those SD-WAN capabilities, but we don't really have firewall as a service yet. You can certainly manually spin our products up in the clouds. And you could even probably create zero routes yourself if you wanted to create kind of a poor man's firewall as a service. But that pure cloud gateway firewall as a service we haven't got to yet at WatchGuard, although it's definitely in our roadmap or our plans. My question is, do you think like this ultimate idea of all of UTM services being able to be delivered just through a cloud gateway, will that make network security appliance go away? Or do you think perimeter security appliances will still exist? What's the mix there?
Yeah, absolutely. They'll still exist. And a couple points you made earlier, I think, tie into this. So number one, you know, thinking about all those kind of different tools relative to SASE, I think firewall as a service is arguably the most immature. I mean, it's been around for a while, but there hasn't been a lot of adoption. Firewall at the perimeter has still been predominantly appliance-based. One of the things you mentioned was the ability to almost offload some services, right? So we're not saying that there's no box or appliance at branch or remote office locations. It's just more about, you know, optimizing that deployment. So offloading some of the more compute intensive functions like SSL decryption to kind of make better use of the appliance, number one. And then you mentioned the use case of, using the cloud gateway for distributed users. And so having one common solution that has, consistent policy across, but the ability to distribute that enforcement, into an appliance at the branch office via the cloud for a distributed user or remote user is really what's important. You mentioned kind of the cloud hub. That's true to an extent, but it's almost many cloud hubs, right? It's not centralized. It's a distributed cloud hub. But I think the point still stands. So yeah, especially on the firewall side, it doesn't go away anytime soon. And we found that's true kind of overall from an appliance perspective. There's refresh cycles involved, and this is something that organizations are going to want to, be thinking about how it plays into that refresh in the coming years and kind of make good on what they have in place now.
Yeah, we absolutely agree that I think it's some sort of hybrid. But I think you hit the nail on the head with one of the beauties is suddenly smaller boxes might be able to do more things because you can pick and choose what you want the box to do locally, depending on your use case. And yet, as you mentioned, distributed computing for some services, you can definitely offload some of that to the cloud from the box. So I think you're right. I think the idea that boxes will go, there's always going to be perimeters, even technically the cloud is a bunch of servers in a perimeter somewhere.
I hate the term the perimeter is dead. It's changed.
Yeah.
It's completely different. There's no argument there, but it's very much still
a perimeter
thing.
Perimeter is everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I think the key point is whether it's on a perimeter or whether it's a remote user, you have to have this same capability and security policy for everybody, wherever they are. And speaking of user-centric, wherever people are, let's talk about ZTNA or Zero Trust Networking or Zero Trust Network Access, if you want to be specific. How important to that is that to SASE? I think that actually is probably one of the bigger aspects of SASE, for instance. So how does that relate?
Yeah, and the importance is really become prioritized over the last 6 or 8 months. I think, when this was introduced pre-pandemic, it was certainly part of the architecture and a focus, but we've really seen a shift in how companies are thinking about ZTNA. So essentially, if you think about a traditional VPN, you have, a concentrator through the firewall kind of at the perimeter. Users are connecting through it. It's visible on the internet. And then, once they're authenticated, they likely have kind of broader access to the network than to just a specific application. So the idea with ZTNA in a lot of cases is you kind of separate the gateway from the brains or the controller. You are, requesting access through the controller, which, does not sit in front of the application. And once you go through that authentication, which pulls in zero trust tenants essentially of multi-factor, continuous validation and things like that, then access is broken to the gateway and you only have access to the application for which you're supposed to have and you're trying to connect. So it really provides a more granular approach to access. And when this first came out, but maybe a year ago, it was very use case oriented. So companies were thinking about it in terms of providing access to third parties or for M&A and things like that. What we've really seen since the pandemic took hold is a shift to, I want to think about my broader remote user needs, including employees, and think about, maybe how this over time replaces a VPN. Now that's another big kind of topic that's going to take a lot of time to bring to fruition. But it's something that companies are starting to think about now where they maybe weren't even 8 months ago.
Yeah. And tell me if you agree, kind of, if I were to describe it in a different way, let me know if this is something that you agree with. Traditionally, our security policy has been very device IP and location based, right? You have a appliance, it's one location, it has policies. And of course, any users behind it adopt those policies. Different branch offices might have different, and then you have some policy for your generic VPN user. But the problem with that is it's really what we want is one user, John Grady, what you have access to should always remain the same. the device you're behind, where you are in the world, all that stuff should not matter at all. It should be, here's the stuff John Grady can do at my organization. And I really don't care where he is. I don't care if he's accessing Office 365 from an airport. I don't care if he's behind a security appliance. That security and networking policy should be the same for him. So to me, one of the first things zero trust networking does before you even get into the zero trust part is it focuses all the policy on very user-centric and less about devices and locations. There might be some aspect to the policy of what you can do one place versus another, but it's a policy that follows you wherever you are.
I agree with that generally. I do think that, and I do think at this point, this is more kind of marketecture analyst speak, but the focus on identity and users is absolutely spot on. I think where we're going is more contextual access. So I do think, you know, before you had to kind of write discrete policy for, you know, John is, you know, has access to this application when he's, you know, logging in from this IP address. If it's, you know, a different one, you know, maybe not. With zero trust network access, it may take some of those criteria into account. If it's an unmanaged device, a strange type of day, a geography that he's not typically connecting from, you know, maybe we look at this. That's an advanced use case, though. I don't think a lot of companies are thinking about it that way, but that is where it's going.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely. We agree with, I think they call it CARTA, Continuous Adaptive Risk Trust Architecture. And because we also sell multi-factor, we're very into, you know, what John Grady can do. If we know he's in the headquarters, is more open than what John Grady can do if, and by the way, sorry, I'm using you as an example. That's John, right. if he's in China at 4 a.m. U.S. time or something like that. So yeah, I definitely appreciate the context stuff, but identity-based is pretty important. And then I guess the zero trust part is what intuitively people will get, which is not just defining by user what people are allowed to do, but only letting them do what they are allowed to do. You know, not giving, even if you are a trusted user, I'm not automatically going to give you every piece of access to my organization. It's going to be just what you need. So I guess the really part of SASE's kind of part of combining these technologies is really to add better security capability to some of the workloads that kind of traditional perimeter-based security might miss, which comes down to public clouds. I mean, I think no matter the size of your organization, you're probably leveraging Google Cloud, AWS, Azure to some level. You're certainly leveraging SaaS. I mean, Office 365 is almost universal among many of the partners we deal with. How does SASE kind of help protecting those two workloads? And I think the other thing, I don't know if you want to differentiate a little bit, but a lot of the time we generically call the cloud, but I feel like the SASE use case is very different from the public cloud, the AWS Azure use case. So how do you get different protections depending on those clouds?
Yeah, I think when you're talking about SaaS applications in the public cloud, there's a more direct protection of those resources via the CASB functionality. So the data within threat prevention and detection for potential, you know, malware sitting within those applications.
If I pause you for a second, sorry for that, but just for any listeners that don't know, CASB, I believe also a Gartner term, stands for Cloud Access Security Broker. And I personally think it's an unintuitive term, but what John just said, it's all about protecting SaaS. And technically, for the nerds out there, typically it does it via either APIs published by the SaaS provider, or it does some sort of identity-based reverse proxy, where when you log into your corporate O365, that login allows your corporation to force you through that proxy before you get to the SaaS server and apply certain things like malware protection and the things you were talking about. So sorry, just wanted to define that for folks, but go ahead, John.
No, it's a really good point. And not to go down the rabbit hole, but you know, when that was first introduced, so the concept's maybe 7 years old. I think some of the startups came on the scene to 2012, 2013, and it was predominantly API based. It's shifted more, and when you incorporate the API protection, you're able to protect the data within the application. On the on the proxy side, because you're sitting in front, it's more access and threat prevention focused. And so in the SASE context, you kind of need both, which has been termed multi-mode, to do full protection. But I think, you know, back to your original question, you are within SASE, you know, kind of actively protecting those SaaS applications. Now, if you're talking about infrastructure as a service or platform as a service and workloads on AWS and Azure, I think it's more indirect and you're really relying on ZTNA for access, but there's typically not a cloud workload protection part of it, which I would kind of qualify more as direct protection for those workloads or micro segmentation, things like that.
Cool. So I do wonder, I guess this question's kind of redundant, but you already mentioned, I think SASE originally was mostly thinking about offices, branch offices, and the connection to cloud, and remote user was a possibility, but not the focus. But how has that changed? I do think actually, to all of us, this work from anywhere or remote user is going to become more common. Period. Even, you know, it's something we've seen happening historically, but obviously the pandemic seems to have accelerated it, and a lot think it might be a change that lasts for a while. So how does SASE changing a bit to cover the remote user more?
Yeah, I think the kind of impetus for starting to look at these types of solutions or consider this type of architecture has definitely shifted from distributed offices to remote users. But, you know, we've started talking about the hybrid workplace as the lasting impact from the pandemic. I talked to so many more knowledge workers than IT professionals, but that worked for companies that did not have the flexibility that I think we in the IT industry typically enjoy. And you know, their feeling is their companies are going to be much more open to remote work. That doesn't mean that people are never going to go in the office. And so if anything, you know, SASE through the incorporation of SD-WAN makes kind of standing up more but less heavy branch offices easier from an infrastructure perspective. And then obviously supports the remote user. So remote user is the driver right now. But I do think that, you know, organizations have an eye towards, you know, continuing to support a office environment moving forward. And, you know, it does that too. So I think that's the benefit of the approach.
Cool. So some of the last few things I wanted to ask are kind of more practical for the IT practitioners out there. The first is, you know, SASE has been out for a little while, at least a year, 2 years or so. But with analyst terms, which, by the way, you know, some nerds might make fun of analyst terms, but usually they are bringing up really true technology paradigms that are happening, but do sometimes take time to trickle down through the entire industry. So the question is, you know, WatchGuard mostly deals with, and I think our podcast mostly talks to, a lot of mid-market customers. Some are certainly big distributed enterprises, but some are smaller businesses out there. How long do you think before even SMBs start adopting SASE-like solutions, or are they doing it today?
It's a really good question. So totally agree with your first point. When we've done research on this, primary research on this, we have to define the term. And anecdotally, when I've had conversations and I say SASE, I get kind of the glazed look. But as you start talking about what it is and why it's important, there's a recognition of kind of, you know, why we're talking about it. So relative to the mid-market, you know, I referenced that kind of, I'm glad we didn't call this next gen something, because I do think that term is overplayed, but this is the evolution of, you know, what was a UTM, then the next gen firewall. This is a continuing evolution of the network security stack. So it's going to be applicable to mid-market. The research we've done shows interest there, if not, you know, adoption at this point. I do think, you know, it'll be interesting to see with the pandemic and the fact that mid-market organizations are sometimes resource starved, you know, if that impacts the time frame. But I would say within the next couple of years, you'll start to see a concerted uptick there. It's been enterprise focused. That's where the solutions are now, but I do think it's moving down market.
Yeah, I definitely think you're right. And by the way, when we talk about the use cases, which include bringing in cloud workloads like SaaS, I would even argue SMBs are even more SaaS reliant sometimes than enterprises. So they definitely have the use case for this, that kind of topology and paradigm shift. So definitely coming. And not all, I agree with you on the pandemic. I mean, this is something we've been talking about at WatchGuard for quite a while. We, of course, do view of the future strategy where we're looking 3 to 5 years down the line. But I do think the pandemic has kind of changed our mind on whether this is 3 to 5 years versus 1 to 2 years. So it's definitely, these are trends that happened before the pandemic, but they, it seems to have pushed them forward. I guess the other thing, you know, when there is a new analyst term, for good reason, a lot of companies that have pieces of the solution kind of jump onto it. And I would argue early on, maybe they don't have the entire vision of SASE yet, right? You know what I mean? Even us, I would say we have pieces of this, but we're working towards the whole vision. But as people are seeing everyone advertise SASE and they're thinking of actually looking for this solution, what would you tell them to look out for or ask about to really find out if this is kind of a more full SASE solution, or if they're just using the acronym for one of their things? What are some of the key highlights you'd recommend when people are looking at it for their purchasing decision?
So first and foremost, I think there's only a handful of vendors that have, you know, a true, in every sense of the term, SASE solution, which is fine because it's been a year. And so the vendors that are kind of offering the silver bullet, I would just on the surface kind of be wary of, at least for the next maybe year, because everyone's moving quickly towards this, but right now it's just unrealistic. And so, you know, if someone's saying, you know, hey, absolutely, we're SASE, that's, you know, be wary. If they're, hey, this is our approach to SASE, this is how we fit into a SASE architecture, I think you can start to have the conversation. And the three things that I focus on are scalability, flexibility, and integrations. So being able to support all the different types of tools and services we talked about, and scale over time, address the hybrid deployments we talked about and be flexible and kind of address different use cases, and then have, you know, integrations with technology partners to fill in the gaps that they inevitably have, because this is a really big idea and concept.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I do think many of us are trying to build the core of SASE ourselves too, but to your point, today few are even close to there. And the integrations become so important, right? Because maybe you're good at security and SD-WAN, but you don't have CASB yet. But if you have integration options with CASB vendors, you can still provide that kind of SASE solution combined scenarios. So that's great advice. Thank you. I guess really good intro, I think, to SASE. Hopefully our audience kind of understands it better. But before we leave, do you think there's anything we missed on the topic that we might want to cover for them? Or did we cover it all?
I think we hit all the big points. Just again, you know, don't be scared off by the admittedly kind of overwhelming and broad nature of this. I think if you're using cloud and you have employees that are outside of the office, and it's kind of current, but if you have a lot of office, this is something to look at and start thinking about maybe who you might work with or how you want to start thinking about your journey down this path, because this is kind of where security, especially network security, is going.
Cool. Well, thank you for your time, John. I think we'll probably have you on another podcast shortly to talk about some other trends that you covered in one of your documents. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening, everyone. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_. Corey is at @SecAdept. And the both of us are at #the443podcast. Thanks again for listening, and you will hear from us next week.
We're looking forward to all your SASE comments. That's what the internet is about, right? Throwing sass at other people.
So SASE.